The opinions expressed on the ACB Media Network are those of the content providers and should not be viewed as an endorsement of any product or service. Nor does it reflect the views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
Good afternoon. This is Doug Powell. I'm the president of the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, AAVL. And I want to welcome everybody to this afternoon's call about healthcare. Healthcare and blindness. How do they get along? So Danette is also a facilitator. So Danette, you want to take it from here?
We have Deanna Noriega and Don Brush as caregivers. Both of them as caregivers.
I'm Deanna Quietwater Noriega. I am a caregiver currently for my husband, Curtis. We've been married 52 years. He's put up with me all of that time. So there is no way I'm going to let him down by not being here for him as he struggles with diabetes, COPD, and a neurologic condition which mimics Parkinson's without having quite all of the medical evidence to say that's what he has. And right. I've been a caregiver since childhood with one thing and another, being the oldest.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Deanna. Don, why don't you introduce yourself a little, please?
Well, my name is Don Brush. I'm from, Aberdeen, South Dakota, but I spend a good portion of my time in my hometown of Clark, South Dakota, about 75 miles between the two locations. And I currently spend a lot of time with my dad, who is, he will be 94 in September. And he just went through knee replacement 6 months ago. And he is out just, ramming around like he always does, mowing and doing everything possible. Oh, wow. Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
Good for him. So, yes. Anyway, that's kind of my story. I'm totally blind. I've been since birth as a preemie. Mm-hmm. Again, thank you for asking me.
All right. Well, thank you, Don. Okay. So I really couldn't find anybody who was a recipient of caregiving services. So except for myself. So I am the recipient one, and I've had a caregiving service for probably the past 20 some years. And this is the caregiver is, I'm totally blind with hearing loss. And so I do have limitations. So it do has to be a specific person. So that's just my story. And let me go to the list of questions again. There we go, right there. Okay, we got that. Did you need to go through any special training to be a caregiver? And let's start with Deanna.
No, not really. And I think that one of the problems is, I worked for an independent living center for 10 years before retiring to take care of my husband. The people that apply generally don't have any background in specific caregiving, and it's only if you're at the upper levels of caring for somebody that is a quadriplegic that may need very specialized care. That level is a different program. It's usually through a medical thing, like visiting nurses and things like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The rest of it, the person who's receiving the care kind of directs what they are needing done, and it's guided by a plan of care which is written up by the administrator of the caregiver's company, whatever that is.
The agency,
The agency. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a long conversation with the person requesting care, and then they are assigned a certain number of hours based on what the estimate is of what they need. And they'll have a list of things like if you need housekeeping, if you need meal prep, if you need bathing, if you need, you know, it'll go down the list of what they feel that the person who's requesting care needs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Deanna, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
This is Dawn. So are you working, you know, providing that service for your husband within an agency?
No.
No.
At this time, I haven't, because we own our own home. And if he were to apply for Medicaid, which is the only thing that pays for it, our house would be, would have a lien against it.
Yeah. Do you get paid to take care of your husband?
No, a spouse can't, but my granddaughters could, anyone in the family other than a spouse. Because they figure if you're married to him, you're going to take care of him anyway.
It's part of the deal.
Okay, so Dawn, what about you? Did you go through any special training or anything?
When I first read that question, I first said no. But then I thought, wait a minute, that's not quite right. Because, well, I am a certified Stephen minister. And so, and that can be, I just took my training at the Methodist church that I go to, but it can be from, you know, any church that might offer that training. And that's a 50-hour training. So I would be a caregiver to someone who's a care receiver.
Right.
And I have, you know, done a little of it within that group, but I've, you know, done quite a bit and had enough on my own plate with my own family that, you know, I just haven't been able to do more. Also, I worked as a rehab teacher for nearly 10 years. And that program is Independent Living Elderly Blind Program. And 10 years ago, I actually retired, because my mom was at a nursing home or assisted living or wherever at the time, because she was dealing with some, you know, memory issues and dementia. So it was really getting to the point where it's like, maybe I need to just be more visible to my own family. And now I stay with my dad, and I don't even know if he, you know, realizes I say I'm a caregiver, because, you know, he does pretty well at taking care of himself. But still I am in that role at times.
Right. Okay. So as somebody who receives caregiving service, I go through like a yearly evaluation where they ask me if I can get out of bed or get out of the chair or get off the toilet by myself, which I can. If I couldn't do that, I would get more hours. But right now I get like 49 hours and that's it. And that's 49 hours per month. She does grocery shopping or doctor and cleaning and like reading the mail. That's just what I have a caregiver for. And Doug, do you have any questions, or do you have any questions? I mean, like any comments about this one question or anything?
I do. Thanks. So my understanding is that the money for these programs comes through the Administration on Community Living through the AAAs, which are the Area Agencies on Aging. Now, is that where, Danette, is that where you have gone to get your help? And Deanna, is that where you have signed up to, you know, to, you know, for the services that you render? So that's one question.
Mm-hmm. For me, I go through agencies, and I've gone through Sunrise Community Services, or what I'm doing now is going through Catholic Community Service. Because of COVID, I had to change caregiving services. I mean, had to change agencies, and Sunrise didn't have anything, and Catholic Community Services did, and that's who I went with.
There are private agencies that you can pay directly. Yes. There are ones that get paid through Medicaid. That was the case of my independent living center. There are options through a variety of charitable organizations, like Danette talked about, the Catholic charities. It's pretty spread out, and it's not consistent. It all depends upon where you are in the country, whether you're in a city, whether you're rural. It's piecemeal, and that's one of the problems with the system. We have an aging population. Mm-hmm. Many people, as they grow older, may be widowed or never have married, and they may not have an immediate family to care for them. Mm-hmm. A senior at risk can be placed against their will into a nursing home or a facility because it's believed that they are incapable of caring for themselves. As a services for independent living specialist, I had the responsibility to report if I saw things that were happening that looked as if a person were at risk. For example, one of the people I went to visit, her home was very dirty. And my driver said there was a fish tank that the water was so dark, she could see some movement in it, but she couldn't tell what was in it. And the woman was on oxygen, and she was still smoking because the house just reeked. Oh. So it was a place that I didn't want to be in very long. And I had to report her as at risk because she had paid attendance, but they were personal friends that were receiving money and they obviously weren't enforcing. They were either not doing the work, or they were allowing her to tell them that she didn't care about this or that or whatever. And the smoking while on oxygen was kind of scary. I couldn't see why anyone would want to work in that environment. Yeah. If she could blow you up.
Okay. Don, what about you?
Well, I have a sociology degree with emphasis on gerontology. And at Northern State University in Aberdeen, as long as we had a professor there who was very passionate about the needs of the elderly, that program continued. But then when he retired, anyway, there's no more program. And how sad is that?
Yeah.
Because I learned so much through that program. And, some of the things that you're talking about. And I know in one of our classes, people, are sometimes abused even by their own family members. And one lady basically, ate dog food. You learn some awful stuff, but it happens.
Yeah. Wow.
Obviously. And, but anyway, I think sometimes, we take a backslide more than go forward because we don't do well. With our elderly population. I was just visiting last week. I went to Memphis to visit my cousin, whose mom is 90 and in very, very poor health, and she resides in assisted living. And, she's in poor health emotionally. She is not happy, has not been since she her daughter moved her to Memphis. And, that's another whole thing.
Yeah.
So my cousin and I, we compared notes and talked a lot, and I could see I thought, wow, this has taken a toll on my cousin even. I just know it. And so Anyway, that's my thoughts there.
Doug, did you have another question?
Are there, are you aware of, because when I was looking at our Area Agency on Aging website, they had classes for caregivers.
Right.
And I was wondering if people who are doing, you know, healthcare with their families know about these and avail themselves of these. And you know, also, you know, kind of a what, playing off of what Dawn was just saying, right. You know, taking care of the caregiver.
Mm-hmm. With working for an agency, they do have to go through once a year when their birthday comes around. They have to be sure that they've taken these classes. And these classes may not have anything to do with the blind person, but I used to have my very best friend was my IP, which means my independent caregiver. She wasn't anybody else's caregiver, only mine. But I need someone who drives, and she doesn't drive no more. So if I want to go see my best friend, I have to go see her. So I do know if you're working for an agency, you do have to go through classes.
Yes, you know, you have an orientation to what you might be expected to do for a person. And then you can, oftentimes caregivers are students that may be nursing students, occupational therapy students. If you're near a university that has any kind of programs like that, because it's flex time based on your availability, it works out well for that. Or it works out well for women who have family members that can do some trade-offs.
It's not flex time. If you work for an agency, it's not flex time. My caregiver comes twice a week, these certain hours.
Oh, yes. But what I meant is the time frame is flexible. She can accept clients to fit her schedule if she's a student or a person that has other jobs, even at home or school, so that they can sign up for when they're available and then be sent out on that basis.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dawn, you wanted to say something?
Within the Stephen Ministry program, there is continued education
for
the people that are caregivers.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You know, otherwise, you know, as far as myself, I say that I'm a caregiver because, well, it's my dad and, you know, that I'm with. And I, you know, I certainly could share some of my thoughts about that whole process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if anybody has any questions about that.
All right. Well, we'll take questions from the attendees when we're done with these six questions. Okay. Are you a caregiver for someone who's blind or visually impaired? Probably not.
No.
Mm-hmm. I have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
It wasn't a paid position or an official position, but we had a young girl when I was in high school whose parents applied for welfare for her when she was 16, and she had never been to school. She'd never been allowed out of bed. She couldn't walk, dress herself, feed herself. Mm-hmm. And so when an OT said she was ready to go to high school because she taught her to dress herself and walk and so forth, I was assigned by the resource room teacher to assist her in adjusting to high school.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And it was sort of those, oh my goodness, what do I do? Because I had tutored kids before in the resource program that came in that perhaps had difficulty with reading or math or whatever. But this was a whole different thing working with a young girl who was so, she was like an isolate in that she spoke well, but she didn't have a grasp of social behavior at all, and what was appropriate and what wasn't.
Yeah. Had she had any schooling?
No.
Oh my gosh, is she supposed to go to high school?
Yeah, because she was 16.
Wow. Wow. All right. I think Dawn answered that. And we'll go to the next one. Okay, just out of your own knowledge, what specifically would you have to do differently for a blind or visually impaired person?
I could answer that.
Go ahead, Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Communication would be number one.
Yes.
Verbal communication, especially, mm-hmm. and just having that one-on-one conversation with that particular person and trying to meet those needs and figuring out what the person, can do for his or herself and mm-hmm. go from there. And seeing what agencies can be involved or, whatever mm-hmm. help is required.
Right. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll try this one. Mm-hmm. I've also babysat for a deaf, blind young girl at one point. And I had to watch very carefully her reactions to things because she had such limited ability to communicate. But if you have ever worked with a baby or a toddler, you learn to read them by how they respond to what's going on around them. And then you work backwards trying to figure out what it is mm-hmm. is distressing them or mm-hmm. what they might want before they're verbal. And that's pretty much what I was doing when I cared for her. Mm-hmm. I took care of her as if she were an infant or a toddler,
right.
Just responding to what she was able to let me know about through her reactions and responses. Mm-hmm. And okay. So I think the key here is to take people where they're at.
Yeah.
And not have any judgment because you weren't in their position, like the young girl in high school. I had every opportunity to explore and be and learn. Yeah. She didn't. And mm-hmm. I couldn't be upset with her or mm-hmm. judgmental about how she behaved because I didn't have the same experiences. So mm-hmm. in dealing with anyone who's visually impaired, you have to ask them what they need and gently coax them into stretching out a little bit more if you can, but not be upset with them if they're too afraid or too damaged mm-hmm. by previous experience to be able to benefit by anything you might want to teach them.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Something that Dawn had said was to look at like other different types of agencies who would help. And what I said yearly I get evaluated about if my needs have changed and what I think it was about a year ago, what they added was it's called Mom's Meals. So I get 16 meals delivered a month, which it does cut down. Instead of 47 hours, I get 39 hours, which that's how that's paid for, which is fine with me. And it used to be chicken soup brigade or something like that. But I didn't like those meals as well. The Mom's Meals is much better. They could deliver breakfast. Like if I wanted half breakfast and half dinner, they'll do that. And it's just meals that are prepared that you just heat in the microwave, which these Mom's Meals are a lot better than the chicken soup meals. I like them much better. So
when I worked, for the state with the Independent Living Elderly Blind Program, we would refer a client to whatever agencies we felt mm-hmm. would could add resources and
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So Dawn, working in the I call it the OIB program, mm-hmm. You coordinated with, for example, with the ACL, you know, the Administration for Community Living kinds of programs as well?
Well, we did a, you know, with each new client, of course, we had all the forms to fill out and intakes and, you know, then had to come up with a plan. So, and then we, like, if someone had hearing loss, we'd look at, you know, do they need hearing aids? Do they, you know, we'd call in someone or make a referral, just depending on what their needs might be, along with the vision loss in various stages.
Deanna, it must have been incredibly difficult to work out a plan for the 16-year-old woman that you were working with, because, you know, you had been through school from first grade all the way through, and obviously she had not. And so it must be really difficult to sort of remember what you learned in school that she had not been exposed to.
Right. And Deanna, you were in school too when you did that, didn't you?
Yes. I mean, that's why I say I've been a caregiver most of my life, because I was the oldest of five kids and my mother worked two and three jobs. So I was the authority there at home, trying to keep younger brothers and a sister in line and trying to make sure that we all did what we were supposed to be doing. So I think that caregiving isn't like a profession so much as it's necessity. You step in where you can help. I couldn't really change a lot for the girl in high school. I could talk to the woman who ran the program for mentally delayed kids and make suggestions on how she could best work with her. I could help her study her alphabet and see if she was able to learn Braille or not. I didn't really have any set guidance. It was just like, well, what can I try to show you today? And what will work? And working with the resource room teacher and the teacher that had her for her the rest of her class periods. I was only working with her one period a day.
Sounds like she was pretty isolated. Yeah.
Did you know tactile ASL?
No.
Wow. Did she?
No, she didn't need it. The other child that I was babysitting for, I was just a neighborhood teenager that was asked to come and babysit.
That's what she was the one who was definitely.
So. Okay. Yeah. So for the next one, what are some tips for being a good caregiver? Not necessarily for anybody, not necessarily for a blind or visually impaired, just some tips for being a good caregiver. I mean, I had one caregiver. She used to be a puppy raiser, so she was my IP. And with her, it was kind of funny because with her, she was saying, you know, I don't feel like this is my job. I feel like we're just hanging out together and I'm just doing things for you. We're just hanging out. It's like, well, we're good. We just hang out. Good. So, but yeah.
I think for being a, you know, good caregiver, communication,
patience. We both hit that one.
I have to actually say some days I'm not very patient. Being just, you know, a good listener,
right?
Figuring out, you know, what that person wants or needs.
Yeah,
that's the biggies.
I tell you, the receiver, caregiver receiver, has to have a whole lot of patience too.
Yes, because if your caregiver has never been around another visually impaired person, they may not have a grasp at all of what your needs are, and they may assume they do.
Yeah, I mean, with my dad, well, he's going to be 94 in September. You know, he has wet macular degeneration. He has very severe hearing loss, noise induced from farming and hunting and everything. So, you know, you take those two right there.
Right.
My patience some days gets, you know, a little thin.
Yep.
Because the TV is the worst. I don't listen to it, but you've got the damn thing so loud that, you know, I could hear it across the street. I remember that when I used to go see my clients also. It's like we'd come, my driver and I'd come down the hall and it's like, oh boy, there's the TV. And it would be so loud, they could hardly hear us knocking on the door.
So like for me, like if we're out and about, like grocery shopping or something, I'm at the handle of the basket and she's at the other end. If she's not looking at me when she talks to me, I don't hear her. She has to put up with me saying, what did you say? Would you please look at me when you talk to me? Yeah. And so I don't hear her.
Well, and I think that oftentimes when someone is genuinely sick, not just dealing with a disability they may not have had before, there is sometimes pain levels, and that can make people very short-tempered and impatient. And I've, you know, taken care of several grandparents who had different stages of dementia, and they may ask the same question 20 times while you're trying to get, you know, the dishes done and clean the bathroom and do various things for them around their house. And all you can do is keep answering it sweetly, because it's not their fault that they have faulty wiring upstairs and signals are getting crossed, and they can get delusional and not know who you are.
As a caregiver to your husband, I would think dealing with a lot of pain at times, that must be harder for you.
It is hard, because when I have to do things for him that are painful, I absolutely hate it when he gasps in pain. You know, because I feel like I should be able to do this better. But sometimes there's no better. It's just what has to be done. And there's also, you know, some things are humiliating for the person to deal with. Incontinence, that kind of thing. And you have to be, you know, I'll laugh at him and say, hey, I took care of our kids when they were babies. This kind of stuff happens. When bodily functions are natural, don't get upset. Don't blame yourself, you know, and it's just extra laundry. No big deal. The washer and dryer don't care.
Doug, do you have any comments? Okay, go ahead, Dawn. Sorry.
The thing I have felt, like with my mom, we had the chance for her to go into assisted living, which we did. And sometimes I thought maybe that wasn't a good thing to have done. I know she knew it and, you know, wanted to come home. But then I thought, you know, what's going to happen to my dad? If she's home, that's going to put more stress on him. Well, anyway, and sometimes I feel like I was more the caregiver than the daughter. So I was always suggesting things or saying things, Mom, you know, you don't need to do this. You don't need to do that, whatever. And sometimes now I blame, you know, it's hard not to regret some of that.
Right. That's a totally different call when you start talking about like nursing homes or rehab places. They don't get some places, they don't get the best care.
Yeah. It just, you know, one thing I'll have to say, I'm in a small town with about 1,000 people. And I will tell you that when she was in the nursing home, for the last couple of years, my dad was up there 3 times a day, bless his heart. Wow. And believe me, they knew who we were. And one day, the wrath of dawn hit and I came unglued, and it was not pretty. And yet I'd had it. And, you know, you know, sends kind of apologize to one of the workers who wasn't there anymore. But you know what? It just happened.
Yeah.
And so they knew who we were.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a difference.
It does. Not
that we were looking for something bad to happen. That wasn't the intent, but we were there just paying attention.
Right.
And that is important because they're often understaffed and the staff is not properly trained.
Right.
And so I try never to burn bridges. Right. And I try to be as accommodating as I can, but I still, if I'm responsible for my husband's grandmother, my husband's grandfather, my mother, you know, I am going to say what needs to be said and be observant. And before putting any of my loved ones into assisted care, I did a lot of research and figured out what was the least restrictive environment that was safe for them and, you know, move them from level to level as their needs increased. But I always made sure that the places I put them were as clean and well run as I could possibly afford.
Excuse me, it is 2:40?
Okay. Yeah, and if it meant doing their laundry myself, I did it, you know, whatever it took to make it work.
So I was thinking, I do have one more question, and we will go to the attendees in Zoom and Clubhouse now, because I want to make sure that we have time. Doug, is this okay?
Sure, great.
Yeah. Okay, so if you have questions or anything about caregiving, just questions, go ahead and raise your hand in Zoom and in Clubhouse, request to speak, and... Lucy, is there any hands raised?
Yeah. We have Inicio. You can unmute.
Hi, Inicio.
Hi, Inicio.
Hello. How's everyone?
Good.
Great.
I think, Danette, you mentioned a while ago training, you know, what specific training or hints someone may need in order to provide caregiving to a blind person, and especially an older blind person. I think that One of the things that we know happens is that when you go to an appointment, healthcare, or really almost any kind of appointment, if the caregiver is sighted, the normal inclination is for that provider to speak to the caregiver instead of the person. And I think it is so important for caregivers to, as part of their training, to learn not to foment that, not to encourage that, rather to say, you know, if the person doesn't say it, have the caregiver say, you know what, you can talk to that person directly.
Right. I will tell the caregiver, do not make eye contact. Do not make eye contact. Because if they start making eye contact, I'm going to look at your phone. Do not make eye contact. If you do, they'll start talking to you and not to me. So
But you're a good self-advocate yourself. A lot of people are not.
Right.
So it's up to the caregiver sometimes to actually do that or say that.
Right. I go with my dad to his appointments and I make appointments because God darn it, he can't hear very well. Right. And I'll tell you what, for an elderly person to have to navigate the phones with all the push this, push that, do this is one of the worst things there is. And it isn't that, you know, I'll ask him, you know, when do you want this appointment, or when we're at the appointment, you know, sometimes then I'll answer for him, or he'll answer for himself, but I'm there to get the information.
Right. Your dad sounds like a neat person.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Danette.
Thanks, Inicio.
All right.
They let me grow up independent.
Yeah.
You know, I was raised in a little town and then on a farm, and I did everything on the farm. I was an only child, and so pretty much, you know, he let me drive the pickup or the tractor, and he told me where to go and how to do it. And so there you go. My turn.
Okay, you have no more hands.
Okay, Deanna, do you have any comments with that?
Oh, I just wanted to say that if you have specifics about your particular situation. We can't really do that today, but I do run a caregiver support group every Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern. And it's a strictly support. People come and they ask questions. They seek resources. Sometimes they just need to vent because the stress levels can be really high when you're a caregiver, as you're trying to mediate between the medical people and the people you love, and trying to find a balance there, especially when you're not treated respectfully by the medical profession because you're blind or being mistaken for the patient or things like that that happen, because obviously a blind person isn't a caregiver. So that's a situation that happens to many of us, because we find ourselves in caregiver roles because the family perceives us as the logical person to take care of grandpa, mom, dad, whomever, because we may not have an outside job, or we may be perceived as someone who can pick up and go and move in with someone and take care of them, simply because the rest of the family doesn't realize we have lives too. So that's good. What my group does is we meet.
Right.
You know, that brings up a whole nother topic, which Deanne, I'll probably try to get in on your group someday. But I have my own home yet in Aberdeen. So, and still, so far, my dad drives yet, because, well, his biggest issues are reading, and that's one of the worst. Mm-hmm. And we have gone back and forth to Aberdeen for umpteen many years, because that's where the School for the Blind is located. And so he, he's probably driven that route in his sleep.
Mm-hmm.
When that no longer takes place, then I'm going to have to make some choice,
right?
Because I'll have to, but I don't spend much time at my own house anymore. So, I'm at his house. And so consequently, once in a while, I'll say, I don't have a life. I don't have a life of my own.
Mm-hmm.
Which, well, maybe right now this is my life. So, it's a big topic.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing that my caregiver does do is if I want, like, maybe somebody gave me a book to read, well, a paperback book, a printed book to read, I'll have her read it to me. And my IP, she used to be my best friend, used to be my IP for 10 years. Right now, she's doesn't drive, losing her sight. So now I will bring my e-reader over to her house, and I will get to read to her. So, which is fun. Is there any hands in Clubhouse, Darcy?
No.
No.
Well,
Darcy would raise his hand. Yes, he would. Okay, so Doug, do you have any questions so far? I do have one more question for these ladies. And
did you say there was a hand raised?
No.
Oh, okay. I find this really interesting, because I have not been on the receiving or the giving part of what you're talking about, although my mother had a botched she was 92 at the time. They went through and she wanted a cataract operation on her good eye. So she had lazy eye when she was a kid, and she was legally blind in her other eye, and she was getting cataracts on her good eye. And so she decided she wanted to have it taken out, and the lens, the cataract, and the tissue was too thin, so it actually tore during the surgery. And so they were trying to figure out what to do next. And in the meantime, she, obviously she was now pretty much legally blind in both eyes. And even, you know, and she actually is in the Chicago area, or was, and I was in the Washington, D.C. area. So I couldn't actually provide ongoing vision rehab services, you know, to the extent that, you know, that I knew about it. But it was really, I think it, in the like 10 months, that happened in April, and she actually died the next February. And I'm convinced that part of the reason that her health deteriorated was that she had not received the services. She didn't feel confident. She didn't feel competent, and she had to rely on other people. And, you know, so she went from independent living to assisted living to skilled nursing, you know, pretty quickly. And so I was wondering, especially Dawn, have you had rehab services for your dad with his macular degeneration?
Yes, actually, he has been seen through the, you know, same program that I worked with. He also has, and he uses a CCTV, which does help, you know, the reading a little bit. And he has also received some services through the VA.
Okay, you do have a raised hand.
Okay.
Donna?
Hey, Donna.
You can unmute, Donna. There you go.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
I hate when people ask that, but it's okay. Computer was being weird. So, but
can you hear me now?
I want to thank you all for this discussion. Some of you may or may not know, I was a caregiver for my mom for probably longer than I realized. And I think that's one thing I wanted to say. I think oftentimes we become a caregiver and we don't even really realize that we're a caregiver as our parents' age or siblings or, you know, whoever it may be. I think sometimes, you know, we start maybe doing or needing in many cases to do more things for them. And I don't think we really think of it as caregiving, but it actually is. Like when Dawn was talking about, you know, making her dad's appointments. Well, you know, that's sometimes you don't even really think about that you're actually doing something for them that they used to be able to do themselves. But when I was a caregiver for my mom, she has since passed away. But Deanna, I wish I would have known about your support group, because a support group is so important during that time that a person is a caregiver. The stress level can be pretty high. And I think sometimes you don't even really realize it when you're going through it. It's afterward. And then you just think of, you know, anyway, but in my case, I have three other siblings. One would not be able to give care because he kind of needs care himself. It's interesting. I was the person that lived the closest. Actually, my mother lived in my house, so I lived the closest. My two of my siblings live a couple hours from here. But it's interesting when the other siblings start to get involved, when the end is near and that kind of thing. And so my one brother kept like trying to answer for me, and I finally had to say, you know, I'm the one that's been here. I'm the one that had to call the rescue squad when my mother fell, and because he said she'd never fell. And I'm like, yeah, you know. So it sometimes, like Dawn being an only child, there's sometimes that's not all bad.
I hear you,
because you're dealing with some other things as well as the caregiving thing. You're dealing with siblings, and now, of course, I'm dealing with going through all the stuff, and you know, because it's here in my house. Anyway, I just think this is a wonderful topic, and Deanna, I thank you for your support group, and thank you, Danette, and whoever put this together. I think it's great. Thank you.
Cool. Oh. You know, I go see a somebody, 92-year-old lady who has, she's been my friend for years. She has dementia or Alzheimer's or something. She doesn't remember things or can't finish her sentence. I had asked her when I first started going over there, does she want me to try to like say what she's thinking, or does she want me to try to finish her sentence? And she appreciates, depends on the person, but she would appreciate me trying to like guess or know and say it, what she's thinking or what she's saying, because she gets frustrated with herself because she can't think of it.
Yeah. My mother has aphasia now, and I call her every Saturday morning. And if I can make her laugh by telling a silly story, I know she's tracking that day. Mm-hmm. Or if I sing a song to her, and she sings a song back to me, it's another way we communicate. It's you do what works with each person. And I think the important thing for about being a caregiver is one of the things we do for each other every Wednesday morning is we do a check-in. How did your week go? Was it bad? Was it terrible? What happened? And then we do, what have you done for yourself this week? Because it's so easy to get so wrapped up that you isolate yourself because you're too busy being the caregiver and you don't take care of you. And if you break down, then who's there going to be to take care of the one you were caring for?
You have 5 minutes. Touched on our last question. Thank you. Okay. So, but before we get, quickly, when you're overwhelmed, what do you do for yourself when this caregiving job is so overwhelming? What do you do for yourself?
I could answer that.
Go ahead. Good.
Well, what, you know, even though it's work, what gives us a lot of joy and laughter and sometimes a little frustration is our three dogs. I have my third guide dog from Guiding Eyes, and I have two Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. And so my dad, you know, he's the pooper scooper and whatever, but, you know, he likes them a lot, and so do I. Deanna, do you still have a dog?
Yes, I have a 3-year-old yellow lab from the Seeing Eye. He's my 10th guide dog.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
He does make me laugh every day. And laughter for me is one of the ways that I relax my diaphragm and breathe. Is one of the things that helps me. Or if I've reached the point where I want to hit him over the head because he's being so unreasonable today, I will say, oh, I've got to go for a walk with Flynn. He needs the work. I'll be back in 45 minutes.
And I also have a camper now, like this summer. My camper's in the backyard, and so I do go out there. So that gives me a little more,
personal space.
And Zoom hosting gives me an hour away at a time when I can just close my door and not have to have the loud television or whatever it is, him asking me to get something for him that he could reach if he would just turn around in his wheelchair and wheel over there, but he doesn't feel like it,
Okay, so I do want Doug to say a few closing things. And Deanna's caregiving call is on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern time zone. So go ahead, Doug.
And it's on the community list.
Yes.
Right. And if you haven't signed up on the community list, then
I'm on.
You can go to
community@acb.org.
Yep. And will that get you signed up?
You put in the subject line, you put sign me up for community, and in the body of the email, you put your name and your email address, and they will sign you up.
There you go. Good. So I really appreciate Dawn and Deanna and Danette, who's taken this topic on virtually single-handed. And thank you very much for being here today. And anybody who's interested in joining AAVL, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, you can check us out at AAVL-blind-seniors.org. And there's joining information, and there's all sorts of stuff that we're working on. So you can find out more about us. So thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you,
and
Dawn.
I would always be available if anybody, you know, ever wants to contact me.
Excellent. Thanks, Deanna. And thank you, Lucy and Darcy.
And Lucy and Darcy, yes, good.
You bet.